What would you do if you could fire a paintball gun at a stranger from the comfort of your couch? Iraqi artist Wafa Bilal discovered the answer when he locked himself in a gallery for 30 days, allowing anyone online to remotely shoot at him. People from 138 countries fired 60,000 rounds while typing hateful messages they'd never say face to face. The experiment wasn't performance art for its own sake. Bilal's brother had died from a drone strike, and he wanted to show how technology lets us hurt people without feeling their pain. This distance, this ability to disconnect from others' humanity, sits at the heart of our modern crisis. We live in an age of unprecedented connection, yet declining empathy. But here's the surprising truth. Empathy isn't hardwired or fixed. It's more like a skill we can choose to develop, a muscle we can strengthen through practice. The question isn't whether we're capable of empathy, it's whether we're willing to do the work. For centuries, we believed personality was fixed. Neuroscientist Santiago Ramon y Cajal declared adult nerve pathways fixed, ended, immutable. He was wrong. Songbirds grow thousands of new neurons learning songs. Using radiocarbon dating from nuclear testing, researchers proved humans generate new neurons throughout life. String musicians develop larger hand-control brain regions. Our experiences physically reshape our brains. Intelligence shifts dramatically. Average IQ scores rose 14 points over 4 decades, the Flynn effect. Poor children adopted into well-off families gain over 10 IQ points. Personality evolves too. We become more neurotic after leaving home, more conscientious after starting work. While genes establish baselines, empathy is 30% genetic, generosity 60%, we have ranges within which we can move. Trauma survivors often develop deeper empathy. 80% of rape survivors report increased compassion afterward. Empathy isn't just automatic reflex. Psychologist Kurt Lewin viewed behavior as governed by competing forces, approach motives pulling us toward actions, avoidance motives pulling us away. We're drawn to empathy because emotional contagion feels good and signals virtue. But empathy carries costs. Connecting with others' pain risks our well-being. Students walked wider arcs around charity tables with empathy triggers. People avoid hearing emotional details about homeless individuals when they might donate afterward. Yet even psychopaths can activate empathy when prompted. Their brains mirrored suffering similarly to non-psychopaths when asked to focus on victims' pain. Building empathy requires sustained effort. Neuroscientist Tanya Singer's 39-week study had participants practice meditation, loving-kindness, and paired empathy exercises. Brain scans revealed empathy-related regions actually grew. A simpler approach? Stanford researcher Erica Weiss had freshmen write letters explaining that empathy is buildable. 2 months later, these students showed improved emotion recognition and made more close friends. Actors develop empathy by inhabiting characters' inner worlds. For The Pianist, Adrian Brody ended his relationship, disconnected his phones, and lost 40 pounds to encourage loneliness and loss. Drama students outperform other art students on empathy tests, and medical residents who train in drama interact more empathetically with patients. Reading fiction offers accessible perspective taking. Avid readers identify emotions more easily, and brief doses of fiction enhance empathy. People who read George Saunders's The 10th of December later identified emotions more accurately than nonfiction readers. Books let readers safely empathize with characters they might avoid in real life: murderers, outsiders, marginalized people. In Rwanda, the radio drama Music Weya gave 90% of the country language to process trauma. Judge Bob Kane's Changing Lives Through Literature program offered convicts shortened sentences for joining reading groups. While 45% of similar probationers reoffended within a year, less than 20% of program participants did. Tony McAleer's cold hatred led him to create the first white power record label website and an automated racist phone service. He traded his humanity for acceptance. 3 people changed him: his 2 children and Dove Barron, a Jewish leadership trainer who showed compassion despite knowing his past. Fatherhood softened Tony as he tried to be the father he wished he'd had. Dove's acceptance cracked his facade. At a Holocaust museum, he finally connected with others' pain and his own. Political animosity has soared. By 2010, half of Republicans and a third of Democrats would be displeased if their child married someone from the opposite party, compared to just 5% in 1960. Yet contact theory shows meaningful interaction with outsiders reduces prejudice, confirmed by studies of over 250,000 people. After leaving white supremacy, Tony discovered Life After Hate, an organization of formers sharing common stories, using hatred to cover childhood wounds, escaping through parenthood, and friendships with forgiving outsiders. Their approach begins with genuine interest and listening. As Tony emphasized, you absolutely judge the ideology, the hatred, but you don't judge the person. Medical professionals face a paradox. The empathy that makes them effective healers can also destroy them. Dr. Melissa Leibowitz found motherhood changed how she experienced her neonatal ICU work. When Francisco, a premature infant with dying intestines, arrived, his condition was incompatible with life. The team knelt with his parents on the hospital roof terrace, offering them control over their son's remaining time. Nurse Samantha cared for an abandoned baby for 7 months, feeling heartbroken when he left and struggling to care for other patients afterward. Over-empathizing leads caregivers to take heroic measures likely to fail or sugarcoat devastating news. 1 in 3 intensive care professionals suffers burnout, with empathic professionals hit hardest. After 18-month-old Josie King died from preventable errors at Johns Hopkins, Professor Albert Wu discovered caregivers who made medical errors often suffered PTSD but remained silent. He created Resilience in Stressful Events, a peer-to-peer empathy network now counseling over 100 Hopkins staff weekly. Eve Ekman teaches medical residents to distinguish empathetic distress, absorbing others' pain, from empathetic concern, caring without absorption. Research shows meditation reduces caregiver exhaustion while maintaining empathy, redefining their role from heroically defeating death to affirming life transforms empathy from burnout source into sustainable compassion. Sue Rahr, raised among 7 brothers, learned to maneuver, outsmart, and influence. As a police officer, she uniquely completed field training without using force. Now heading Washington State's police training, she's restoring empathy in policing. Taking over the Criminal Justice Training Commission in 2012, Rahr changed the entire culture rather than blaming bad apples. The motto, "In These Halls, Training the Guardians of Democracy," reminds recruits to reject warrior mentality for community caretaking. Every desk displays LEAD, Listen and Explain, with equity and dignity. Officers trained in LEAD used force 30% less often. Jason Okonofwa, now a UC Berkeley professor, researches racial disparities in school discipline he once experienced. His empathic discipline training helps teachers understand student behavior and view discipline as growth opportunities. Suspension rates dropped by half, with strongest improvements among boys and minorities. Most impressively, students behaved better throughout the entire school day, not just with trained teachers, suggesting fundamental behavioral shifts. Ari Wallach's Long Path Labs cultivates intergenerational empathy through workshops where participants introduce their great-great-grandchildren, making future descendants feel real and motivating present-day sacrifice. Experiencing awe, confronting something vast like Earth from space or ancient artifacts, helps us transcend selfishness and feel connected to humanity's vast chain. When Alfred Nobel read his premature obituary labeling him the Merchant of Death, he established the Nobel Prize to transform his legacy. In Long Path workshops, participants write their own eulogies, envisioning possibilities beyond their lifetimes. Ancient empathy evolved for self-preservation, caring for children who carry our genes. Building concern for a future that has forgotten us contradicts our Darwinian impulses, requiring effort and sacrifice for people who cannot repay us. Yet our choices create the future we leave behind. In an age of escalating cruelty, empathy isn't optional. It's how we fight for our moral lives. Every moment you choose connection over disconnection, understanding over judgment, compassion over indifference, you cast a vote for the world you want to create for generations who will inherit the consequences of how we treat each other today.